Now we're holding Tzedek Zion Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, a person sells wine to somebody else, for hechmitz, and that wine went sour, then the seller is not responsible for it, because when he sold it was wine, and it's not his problem that it went sour afterwards. But if it's known that this person's wine regularly goes sour, like every year or previously he sold wine, and it regularly goes sour in a short time, how does a mekach tos? Then it's a mekach tos, because then and then the buyer is entitled to a refund, because he wouldn't have bought it if he had known that that were the case. So if he again, of course, if he knows that this guy's wine regularly goes sour and he bought it anyway, then fine, suffer a kibble. He knew that's going to happen. He accepted it, but otherwise not. Tosfos points out, by the way, we learned in Bava Metzia, there could be a case where, to begin with, a person buys a barrel of wine and they make a deal that, depending on what happens to it, if it goes up and down in price, then it'll be on me. But if it goes sour, then it'll be on you. Our mission anyway is saying that that's typically how it is that it's on the seller in that case. So Tosfos discusses that even. Even if the wine is even if we're not talking about wine that regularly goes sour, we're talking about that this is wine, the quality of wine that we know is expected to be good. Then it went sour for some other reason, as the Gemara is going to discuss over here, where you have different possibilities of things that were done that might make it more likely for the wine to go sour faster. Anyway. The im omel continues the mission of im omel yain rusa mani mocheloch. Now, if the seller says, "I'm selling you fragrant wine," and fragrant implies that it's going to last with the proper fragrance of wine for a while, then chayev lahamid loy ad hatzeres. Then he has to provide him wine that's going to last. That's not going to go sour until Shavuos. After that already, then after that, after Shavuos already is the summertime. So then it's the heat of the summer. So then even good wine is might well spoil. But as long as it lasted until then without spoiling, then we can say that he fulfilled the terms of it. Tosfos actually points out, now here the Gemara is going to mention about various things that might be done with the barrel that might change the mazel of it, that might make it more or less likely to spoil. The point is, in other words, exactly that. He has to give him wine of the quality that, if nothing is done that would make it more prone to spoil, then it needs to be able to last until Shavuos, and then he's fulfilled the terms of the contract. Marshall actually Marshall actually points out that it's possible to the Rashbam may actually disagree with that, may actually disagree with the understanding of Tosfos in that regard. The Yoshin Mishal Shtakad, if he says, "I'm going to sell you old wine," then the definition of old is that it's from last year. And Umiyushan, and if he says aged wine, Shal Shot Mishal Gimel Shanim, then it has to be wine from 3 years ago, meaning including the year that we're in now. So, for example, now is Tufshin Pei Dalet, it would mean, for example, that the wine was made in Tufshin Pei Beis. We're going to see actually in the Gemara that in these cases, when you have Yoshan and when you have Miyushan, it actually has to be able to last until after Sukkot without spoiling. In that case, then fine. It would mean, let's say we're coming up to Sukkot Tufshin Pei Hei, so it would mean that the wine was made in Tufshin Pei Gimel, and then he's fulfilled the terms of the contract. The Gemara starts. So uh, So the Gemara starts off. When we say in the beginning of the Mishnah that the seller is responsible if the wine goes sour, that's only if the lekeach put it in his containers. So now there's the possibility that that maybe his containers were bad and therefore that caused the wine to go spoil. Now, when it comes to when the Mishnah continues, if we know that the guy's wine regularly goes sour, that wouldn't matter. We know that it regularly goes sour, and therefore we can call it a mekach tos, and that would apply even if it's in the lekeach kelim. But here we're saying in the Reisha, when we're saying that the moicher is responsible, then that would be or rather, actually, when we said that the moicher is not responsible, sorry, when we said ein chay bach yosei, would be because the lekeach poured the wine into his keli. So then the moicher can say, listen, it's your fault. Your keli must have been bad. They're not good at keeping the wine at keeping the wine fresh. But if the wine remained in the kelim that belonged to the seller, so then the lekeach could say, even a while later, he can say, ha-omale, the seller, the buyer can say, ha-chamrach v'ha-kankana. Listen, this is your wine, this is your barrels. So obviously what it must be is the wine was already starting to go bad from when I bought it from you. In fact, elsewhere, we learned in Bava Metzia that when wine goes bad, even later on in the season, what it means is that it was prone to go bad even earlier than that, and just you can't tell until now. So now we learned a few days ago. We learned about that it takes 3 days for wine to spoil. And we said, therefore, that Rav had said that when you buy wine, then if it goes sour during one of the first 3 days, then it's the responsibility of the seller. And after that, not. So the Rashbam says, fine, we're talking about either that our Mishnah is talking about that the lekeach put it in his kelim, and then even within 3 days, the moicher can disclaim any responsibility, or that our Mishnah would be talking about where it's in the kelim of the moicher, and we're talking after 3 days. But here we're saying that Rabbi Yosef of Chanina would say that if it remained in the kelim of the moicher, then there was no 3 days, no matter how long it takes for it to go bad. Under the circumstances that the Gemara is going to talk about now, then the seller is still going to be responsible, because the buyer can say, listen, I obviously didn't change anything in it. It's your wine, it's your barrel. So if it went sour, then it means it was going to be going sour to begin with. Well, so the question is, okay, but what's the difference whether it's the whether the barrels belong to the seller? Le malay, why can't the seller tell to him, it's not my fault, you kept it too long? Loy boy loch l'shahui, you shouldn't have kept the wine for so long. So why is it my problem? And the answer is, let's tricha da amalei l'mikva. The case would have to be that where Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanania is explaining our Mishnah is where the buyer says that he wants the wine for mikva, which we learned the other day is a cooked dish that's often flavored with wine. So now that means he has to keep the wine for a while, unlike when he's buying the wine to drink, where he's likely to go through it fairly quickly. When he's using it for mikvah, he's using it only a little at a time, and therefore when he says to begin with that he's buying it for mikvah, then it means that he plans to keep it for a while, and therefore the seller should know that. Therefore, Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanania is saying that the buyer is entitled to say, well, I expected then to get good wine and not to have something that's going to spoil, and then not to get something that's going to spoil that soon. So in short, in other words, so far what we're saying, according to Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina, is if the lekeach poured it into his barrels, then we're saying that the moicher can disclaim any responsibility, because we can say that his kelim were bad. If it remained in the moicher's kelim, but he didn't say he was buying it from mikvah, then also the seller can say, listen, you kept it too long, obviously, but if he kept it in the moicher's kelim and he bought it from mikvah, then he has the right to a refund, even if it's a while later. So that's only one of three possible cases. So the Gemara says, "My duchke did Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina lo'ikam l'masnisim v'kankanim l'lekeach." What forces Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina to say that on Mishnah is talking about where the lekeach put it in his containers, or da'amalei l'mikvah, and that he's saying that, and that he then. And that he's saying that he needs it for mikvah. Why does he need to? Why does he need to bring in the whole matter of mikvah at all? Let him explain that the Mishnah is in fact talking about where the moicher kept it in his kalim, or deloy amale the mikvah, and the customer did not say anything about buying it for mikvah. And say that in that case, then the moicher doesn't have any achrayus for it, even though it's in his kalim, because the keach shouldn't have kept it that long. So again, Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina is saying, sorry, I said it a little wrongly before, that we're talking about whether the keach put it in his kalim. But we're saying Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina's key point is that it depends whether he said lamikbar or not. And if he says lamikbar, then he's expected to get wine that's going to last a while. Where the Mishnah didn't say anything about mikbar, what makes Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina understand that it has to be where he said that he needs it for mikbar? The answer is Amar Rava Masnissin Kshisei, because Rava says because Reb Yosi Reb Chanina found the Mishnah otherwise difficult to understand. Dekatani, because the Mishnah then continues, Im Yadua Sheyenei Machmitz, if we know that this seller's wine regularly spoils, Hareza Mekachtos, and we said it's a Mekachtos and the customer is entitled to a refund, so you have to ask why would he be entitled to a refund even if we know that the wine regularly goes sour? Why can't the seller still argue you shouldn't have kept the wine for that long? So why should I be responsible? So obviously, therefore, we see the Mishnah must be talking about where he said that he needs it for mikvah. So therefore, he needs it to be able to last long term. So now the Mishnah is saying, if we know that this seller's wine regularly spoils, and the owner, the buyer did not know that, and he bought this wine not knowing that he's not going to be able to keep it for mikvah because because it's going to spoil very soon, then he's entitled to a refund. Otherwise, if he hadn't said that, then the seller could say you shouldn't have kept it for mikvah. You need to put yourself on mute. That's what makes Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina say that necessarily we have to be talking about where he said he wants it from mikvah, and that would be the difference, therefore, whether it's regularly prone to spoil or not. Otherwise, in all cases, the seller could tell him that unless it's spoiled during one of the first couple of days is one thing, but otherwise, the seller could say you shouldn't have kept it for that long. Okay. The Gemara points out, now, what Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina is saying disagrees with what Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef says. So Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina is saying, we are talking about, in fact, where the Lekeach put the wine in his barrels, and therefore we're saying, only because he said he needs it from mikvah is he entitled to a refund. Otherwise, the seller could tell him, it's your fault, because it's your barrels. But that if it stayed in the but if it stayed in the moicher's barrels, then he would be entitled. Then he would be entitled to a refund either way. So that disagrees. That disagrees with Rav Chiya Bar Yosef. That disagrees with what Rav Chiya Bar Yosef says. The Amr Rav Chiya Bar Yosef Chamra Mazla de Morei Gorim. Rav Chiya Bar Yosef says that wine depends on the mazel of its owner. Meaning, in other words, when we see that wine spoils, it's not necessary. It has nothing to do with the barrels or anything like that. It has to do with even if he says he needs it for mikvah, nevertheless the moicher could be potter because he could say it was your mazel that caused the wine to go bad. As the pasuk says, even when the wine is disloyal, meaning in other words like that, where wine turns to vinegar and it's disloyal, you expected it to stay wine and it didn't. Gever Yahir Vagomer, the pasuk continues, a proud person. So the Gemara is now going to bring some drushes about it, but the point is, in other words, we're saying when the wine is disloyal and turns sour, then the reason is because he's a Baal Gaiva. So the Rashbam explains it's midah keneged midah. He prides himself on something, on qualities that he doesn't really have, and therefore in return, what happens is the wine that he expected is going to be good turns out to be bad. So therefore, so again, so in the Mishnah, when he tells him that when he tells him that I want it for mikveh, and the seller knows that his wine regularly goes sour, then he doesn't have any excuse. Then that would be when the Mishnah says that he has to refund the money. But otherwise, if it's not known that this guy's wine regularly spoils, then he has the right to say that the reason why this wine spoiled, it's your fault because you're a Baal Gaiva, and therefore you're and therefore it's your and therefore it's your mazel. So now here the Rashbam is saying again that the vort is because he acts like what he isn't, therefore his wine becomes what it shouldn't. Marashos has a different point that we find in various places in Shas that tzaddikim are compared to wine and rishoyim to vinegar. We had in Bava Metzia, for example, in the whole story of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, where Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha and later on a certain Rasha calls him chometz ben yayin, vinegar, the son of wine. So therefore the Yahir over here specifically means that he acts like that he acts on the outside like a tzaddik, like a Talmid Chacham, and really he's not. So therefore he really is there, therefore he really is like vinegar. In fact, the Maharsha adds, you know, we learned the other day in the Gemara, we had the expression that the wine jumps on the shoulder of the one who carries it, where the Shbam had said over there, that means the same as the expression over here, that it means that it depends on the person's mazel. And Tosfos had learned differently and said that it means when you carry around wine, that makes it more prone to spoil. Anyway, Maharsha says the vort is the reason why to mention the shoulder is to hint at the idea. You have a person who, like, so to speak, carries around mitzvahs on his shoulder and pretends like, look what a great guy I am. Everybody respect me. And really, he's nothing like that. So therefore, so now again, so now again, we're saying that the wine can turn sour because of the way the person acts, because he acts like a Baal Gaiva and tries to show off his mitzvahs. So therefore, so again, the point is that even so the point is, even if he said he needs it for mikvah, unless we know that the guy's wine regularly spoils, then the seller, the buyer, would be entitled to a refund. So the Gemara digresses a little bit to talk about some details of the meaning of that pasuk. Omer of Mori, Hai man di yorhir, when a person acts like a Baal Gaiva, afilu ha'inshi beisir lemekabel, he's not even acceptable to the members of his household, the members of his household, meaning his wife, that even his wife makes fun of him. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, the pasuk had said va'achti ayayin boiged, that even if the wine is disloyal, and the pasuk continues gever yahir, a proud person, v'lo yinveh, and he does not yinveh. Now my lo yinveh shafilu means benova shaloi, means that even in his own nova, in his own household, he doesn't find any satisfaction because, like, they make fun of him behind his back. So not only his wine spoils, but even his wife behind his back makes fun of him. Marashah refers to a Gemara into a relevant Gemara in Sanhedrin, that not in Sanhedrin, in Sota, that says that there came a point in history when there started to be more Bali Gaiva, and women would, when they got married, they would look on the surface, they would know to find the person behind that and think that he's a good guy and marry him, and later on she discovers later on that he's a no good Nick, and then she starts making fun of him behind his back. So therefore, that's essentially what the Gemara is saying over here. She thought that he was a chassid. It turns out after they get married that she finds out what he really is, and then she loses all respect for him. So that's what the Gemara is saying over here. That's the result of him acting like a Baal Gaiva and pretending on the outside to be a Talmid Chacham in the first place. And the Gemara continues with another drasha on the same pasuk. Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Kol HaMisgor B'talos Shatamad HaChachamim V'Ena Tamad Chacham. Anybody who prides himself that he wears the talus of he beautifies himself with the talus of a Tamad Chacham, but he's not in fact a Tamad Chacham. Ein Machnisin Oisei B'Mechitzase Shalak Kadosh Baruch Hu. In the future, after 120 or Lasid Lavei, as the case may be, he's not going to be brought into the inner area of Hashem. Meaning, as much as he might be, in fact, he might have many good qualities, but he doesn't deserve to be all the way. He doesn't deserve to be all the way in the inner chambers of Hashem. And again, Midah Keneged Midah, Maharsha says he's acting like somebody that he's not. That he's priding himself on something that's not his. So therefore, he doesn't get to go into what he might otherwise deserve. Mechitzas Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And again, we get from the same words in the pasuk, siv hacha v'lo yinveh. The pasuk says that a proud person is not yinveh. Ochtiv asem el nevei kodshecha. We have the word nevei kodshecha, the holy dwelling of Hashem. So therefore, so it means that the gever yahir, the proud person, lo yinveh, is not going to be able to come into the dwelling of Hashem. Now, what do we mean by he beautifies himself with a Tamar Chacham's talis? So Rashbam explains like this. Earlier in the Masechta, it talked about, there was a piece near the end of the third perek that talked about how a Tamar Chacham acts in terms of his dress and his table settings and the layout of things under his bed, etc. And one of the things it mentioned is that the talis of a Tamar Chacham is arranged in such a way where you can't see more than a tefach of his undershirt. People would wear a long shirt called a choluk, and over it they would wear a talis. So a Talmid Chacham makes sure that no more than one tefach of the underlying choluk is exposed. So now when a regular person acts like that and he dresses like that, even though he's not a Talmid Chacham, then therefore he's pretending to be what he isn't, and that's what the Gemara means over here, that then ein machnis enose b'mchitzase shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On Ein Yaakov, Ein Yaakov gives a different explanation, that it means that when he puts on the talus of a Talmud Chacham, means like he plagiarizes Divrei Torah from Talmud Chachamim and pretends that they're his own. Ben Yehoyada doesn't like either of those explanations. So he explains really what we mean is that the person, so here according to Rashbam and according to Ion Yaakov, the vote is that he's proud, therefore he acts this way. So Ben Yehoyada says that what we mean is, in other words, that So he's pretending to be a Talmid Chacham in order that people should respect him or whatever. The point is, though, he's not in fact acting like a Talmid Chacham. So the result is he's causing a Chilul Hashem, and that's a very serious thing. And that's why we're saying in Mechnisinoise b'mchitzas shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so that was a little piece of Agadah over here. And now getting back to the dinim. By the way, the chidah in Pesach Einayim says another interesting word when we say over here that the wine depends on the person's mazel. Now we know usually ein mazel Yisrael, but here where the person is acting like a baal gaiva, and therefore it means in a certain sense he's denying Hashem, because the Gemara elsewhere mentions that a baal gaiva is tantamount to denying Hashem. Therefore, he's putting himself under mazel. Well, if he's under mazel, then his wine may spoil, and that would be another point the Gemara says. Okay, so the point is, in other words, getting back to, according to Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, when the wine spoils, then there's more reason to say that it's the fault of the person who currently owns it, and therefore that the Moichah would be able to disclaim responsibility, and therefore he says only if the seller's wine regularly spoils, only then would the buyer be able to say Mekach Tos, as opposed to, again, according to Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina, who had said, now, you don't have such a thing. We don't always say that the wine spoils because of the owner. The only reason he would be entitled to a refund is if he said to begin with he needs it from mikvah, he's going to keep it long term, and then the seller has to give him wine that's going to be able to last long term. Okay. So the Gemara says, getting back to dinim, Omar Rava, Hayman de Zabin le Chavisa de Chamer le Chanva, when a person sells a barrel of wine to a storekeeper, a daitel sabuye, and the understanding is that the plan is that the storekeeper is going to age it, is going to keep it and sell it a little bit at a time. So the deal is that Ashbam says, that he's saying, I'm selling you this barrel of wine. I'm on credit. You're going to go and sell it a cupful or whatever at a time. Eventually, once you sell the whole barrel, then we'll figure out how much you made from it, and we'll arrange that you get a little bit of a profit, and then you'll pay me, the rest. So meanwhile, though, it still belongs to the original owner. The storekeeper is just acting as his agent to sell the wine. So therefore, we still say the wine is considered in his reshus. The takifa pauga oyatilsa. Now, if after the storekeeper sold a half or a third of the barrel, it went sour, dinahu de makabel lemine, then the din would be says Rava, that the owner of the owner of the wine, the not the storekeeper, in other words, has to bear the loss because again, it's stolen his rishus. The storekeeper is only his. The storekeeper is only his shliach. You can't even say the pasuk va'afki ayayin burgit and apply it to the storekeeper in this case because not his at all. He doesn't own the wine. He doesn't own the barrel. So therefore, it's stolen the rishus of the original owner. However, the Gemara says, "V'lo yamarn ela v'leshani bebarza." Now that would only apply only if the storekeeper did not change the spot on the barrel where the faucet is installed, the faucet or the spigot or whatever you call it. In other words, you have sometimes when you're selling wine, you don't always open up the top of the barrel and take the wine out of there. You bore a hole in the side of the barrel. And those times the barrels were made out of earthenware. It took special skill to punch a hole in them where it won't break. Anyway, and then you'd install over there like a spigot or a faucet like that to be able to take the wine out piecemeal. So now, if you didn't change that, then that's when we'd say that it's not the storekeeper's responsibility that it went sour. Avol shani bebarza, but if you change the location of that spigot, loy, then we wouldn't say that because now the owner of the wine, the one who contracted with him in the first place to sell the wine, can say, listen, the way I had it, it wasn't going to spoil. You changed it. You made it higher or lower or whatever, and therefore you made it more likely to spoil.
Because
that changes where air is going to get into the barrel. Yeah. Whatever it is, exactly. And further, furthermore, that would only apply only when that we say that the storekeeper is not responsible is only when the market day did not come yet. So therefore, he couldn't sell all of it. So he was only selling it to the customers as they come in. And therefore, again, you can't tell him, well, you should have sold it faster. I didn't have anybody to sell it faster to. But if the market day came and the storekeeper could have sold all the rest of the wine and he didn't bother, then loy, then we don't say that the owner is responsible. Now the storekeeper was responsible because he could have sold it and he could have gotten rid of it faster. Now all of this is according to the Rashbam. The arrangement was again that he says to the storekeeper, I'm going to keep ownership of the wine, you're going to just be my agent to sell it a little bit at a time. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because then what do you mean the expression in the Gemara was Zabin, where he sold it to the storekeeper. The way that Rashbam is describing it, there's no sale. He never sold it to the storekeeper. He just arranged with him that you're going to sell it for me. Rava's point that the Gemara said Veloya Moron is not part of Rava's statement. It's the Stama de Gemara. So then, in other words, so what's the Chiddush and what Rava's saying? So rather, Tosfos says, no, we're talking about he actually fully sold it to the storekeeper with the deal, again, that the storekeeper was going to sell it a little at a time. So it's similar to mikbah. Again, the same way as a person buys wine from mikbah, and it has to be that it's going to last a while, the same way over here. You're selling it to a storekeeper. It's understood that it means it's going to last a while. Okay. V'omar Rava, and Rava says, here's another din in this regard as far as selling wine. Ayman de kabel chamra, where a person takes wine bekablonus. Now, unlike the case of the storekeeper, where the Rashbam had learned that the storekeeper himself is not really sharing to begin with in any of the profits. Basically, the profits go to the owner, just that he has to give the storekeeper something for the time he spent on it. Here we're talking about that the deal is he's going to get half the profits. The owner of the wine, he has the wine in his barrels. The Mekabel is going to accept the wine at the current price in the city, and then he's going to go bring it to another place and sell it, and they're going to split the profits. So this kind of thing is what we have elsewhere in the Gemara. We had it earlier in our Masechta as an iska, where you have to arrange it in order to avoid issues of ribis, because otherwise you have half of it is considered a loan, half of it is considered a pikadon, and he's working on the half of the pikadon for the sake that the guy lent him, and then if he gives him exactly half the profits, then you have issues of ribis, so you have to pay him a salary, or you have to arrange that he gets more of the profits and less of the losses, whatever. We had all the dinim about it in Ezo Neshech. Anyway, so now what we have is, the deal is, adaita demantila la parvasa devol shafat. The understanding is, in this case, that the that the macabre, the one who's actually going to be dealing with the selling of the wine, is not going to sell it over here. He's going to take it to the port of Volshofa. That was a place in Bavel where it was like the central place to buy and sell wine, and therefore the expectation was that if he takes it over there, he's going to be able to charge more for it, because there you have all the wine connoisseurs are there, and therefore he's going to be able to get a better price for it. And what would be an equivalent nowadays would be, let's say, for example, I don't know, you have that you're going to go sell this, let's say, at the Kosher Food Expo or whatever, where you have all the experts over there who know how to appreciate it. Anyway, so here the deal is, he's supposed to take it over there. The Adam Motti Hotta. Now, by the time he got to Volshafat, Zol, the price of the wine went down. So now there's a loss. He expected to be able to sell it for a larger amount, and here the price went down. Dinahu de Makabale, then says Rava, the din is that the owner of the wine is going to have to accept on himself all the responsibility, because the other one, the managing partner, didn't have permission to sell the wine until he reaches Volshafat. So therefore the other guy can't tell him, listen, it's your fault. You kept the wine for too long. You shouldn't have kept it for so long. No, because you can say, listen, the deal was that I have to bring it to Volshafat, and until then I don't have the right to sell it, because you expected to get a higher price for it over there. So again, the point is, in other words, that the investing partner was saying, I expected to get more profit of it. Therefore, I want you to wait until you get to Volshafat and sell it over there. Meanwhile, it went down in price. So therefore, he can say that it's not my fault. You're the one who told me that I should bring it over there. And therefore, the Iska, in other words, in effect, the Rosh actually has a discussion about this with his son, Rabbeinu Yaakov Balaturim, that in that case, then the traveling partner can say the Iska doesn't even really begin until we get to Volshafat. So I shouldn't have to bear any of the loss. You should have to bear all of it. As opposed to the Rosh says in other cases, for example, where he's given money, for example, to buy certain schora, and something happens, then both of them have to share in the loss, because after all, he was able to buy and sell it wherever he wants. He could say that you told me I should use this money to buy this particular schora, and the price went down. But if it hadn't been for that, if it hadn't been for you saying that, I could have used the same money to buy other schora. But the iska does begin right away. Anyway, so Iboilahu. So now we have the question. Fine, we're saying if the price went down, then the investing partner has to bear the loss. Have a chalamai. What about if in between? How about if by the time he got to Volshafat, the wine went sour? The wine went sour. So now the point is, does the owner of the wine have to accept all the hefsid? Because again, like we said at the top of the Amud, the Lekeach could say, it's your wine, it's your barrel. So I need it for mikvah, because it has to be kept long term. So the moicher can't say you shouldn't have kept it so long. And that would be like Rabbi Yossi Reb Chanina. Or maybe he only has to accept half the loss on himself, and the other partner has to accept half the loss, because again, he can tell him your mazel is involved. It's one like Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef had said, that it depends on the mazel of the owner. And here, after all, the traveling partner is half owner of the wine as well, unlike in the case of the storekeeper, where he doesn't own any of it. So Rashbam explains that's the point of the question. So Rav Hillel tells Rav Ashi, I'll give you the answer. When we were in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, Omalon, he told us in such a case, if the wine became vinegar, then no, the owner of the wine, the silent partner with the wine, doesn't have to accept all the loss. He only has to bear half the loss. So not like Rav Yosef Reb Chanina, but rather more like Rav Chia Bar Yosef. The Ikadamri, on the other hand, others say, another version, no, even if it became sour, he has to bear all the loss. Keman, and that would be strictly like Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina, meaning never mind this matter of the wine going sour because of the owner, because of the owner's mazel, that we would say that in the second version, we would say the halacha is, in fact, like Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina. Now, the Rashbam says that in the end, the halacha would not be like Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina. The halacha would be like Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, that we do go according to the mazel of the owner. So only if we know that the wine goes sour, and he told him, I need it from mikvah. So the Rashbam says, after all, Shmuel had said a couple of blot earlier, it's the buyer's responsibility, his mazel. Shmuel had used the expression chamra kasva demore shavar, that the wine jumps on the shoulders of the one who owns it, and therefore that, in other words, that he's the one who bears the responsibility. So we would say the same thing over here now, and therefore the result would be that we would say that we don't care about this matter of whether he said he needs it from mikvah or not. We would say it depends on the current owner. That's according to the Rashbam. On the other hand, Tosfos had learned over there and said that no, Shmuel's statement means something else, and therefore So the Rambam summarizes that it would be Birshus HaMoicher, that regardless it's going to be whether the price went down or whether the value went down, either way. Yeah, so actually either way, the giver is going to have to accept all of the responsibility, like Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina. So in short, in other words, the Rambam learns, and this is how it's brought, in Shulchan Aruch it brings the various opinions, but the point is, according to the Rashbam, the halacha would be like the first version of what we're saying over here, that he doesn't have to bear all the loss, it's split half and half, and according to the Rambam, the halacha would be like the second version, that the giving partner, the silent partner, has to bear all the loss, whether it went down in price or whether it became sour. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Yoshen Mishtala Shtaka Dechola. We said that if he sells him wine that's Yoshen, then it has to be from last year. And if it's Miyoshen, it has to be from 2 years ago. Tana, we learned in a Braiso, Miyashen V'Holach HaLachag, it has to be able to be aged until after Sukkos. So it's not enough to have wine from 2 years ago. It has to also be that it's able to last until Sukkos.
Meaning
through the whole summer, right? Because that's the definition of Miyushan, is that it's able to last for 3 whole years. Now, at the beginning, we said that Marsha had said that evidently Rashbam argues with Tosfos in that, because Tosfos had said over there that he sells him Yayin Mavusam. It has to be good wine, but the Mishnah had said it only has to last till Shavuos. And if after that it goes bad, then the Moicher is not responsible anymore. You can say it was your mazel or whatever. And the pastors, Tosfos would say the same thing applies not just to Mavusim, but also when he says Miyushan. We're here, the Rashbam is understanding the Gemara to mean that it has to be able to last until Sukkos, and that otherwise is a Mechatos. Okay. Mishnah says, a person sells a piece of real estate for somebody else where he's going to use it to build a house. Or a person contracts with somebody else where he's going to build a building on a certain spot, and the building is base chasnus levnai, is a building which is going to be used for the wedding of his son, and then his son is going to live in there after the wedding, because as the Gemara is going to say, a son-in-law should not live too close to his parents, so therefore, like, they build him a separate house later in the Masechta. In fact, we're going to talk about that. Sometimes what they would have is the building in which the father would set aside like a building of his own, a little house of his own, where the wedding would take place, and afterwards he would give it as a wedding present to the new couple. We're going to learn about that concept later in the Masechta. Yeah. So you have base chasnus, you have base almanus lebitoy, or you can have. And the point is, again, since the son-in-law is not going to live by his near his parents-in-law, as the Gemara is going to explain, so therefore, so the father of the chassan is going to build a place close to his house and have it for his son to live in after his marriage, or base almanus libitoi, or a place where his daughter is going to live after she's widowed. So now she wasn't living by her father, because again, the same problem, the son-in-law shouldn't be living near his parents-in-law. So now that she's returning home, then he needs a place to live. The Gemara is going to point all this out, why the Lashon of the Mishnah is this way. Anyway, boina arba amas al sheish, so then the minimum size of the house is 4 by 6 amas. So again, whether a person is selling a piece of land to somebody else, and the guy says, I want to use this house for a base chasnus or base almanus, or we're is contracting, he's saying that you're going to build me a house of this size, then the minimum to fulfill the contract is 4 by 6 amps. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, that's what Rabbi Akiva says. Rabbi Shmuel, I mean, Refes Boko Hizu, Rabbi Shmuel says that would be like a stable. In other words, 4 by 6 is too small to be considered a proper house. Now, it is true, we often say, in many places in Halacha, we say the minimum size of a house is 4 by 4 amos. However, here you're talking about an actual house to live in, and you can have furniture and whatever in there, then Rabbi Shmuel is saying that's really not big enough. The Mishnah continues, Haroitza Lassus Refes Bakr, a person wants to build a barn, a stable, burn a dalad amas al sheish, then it's 4 by 6. The Gemara is going to explain, is this a continuation of what Rabbi Shmuel is saying, or is this a state, or is this part of what Rabbi Akiva is saying? So we'll see in the Gemara. Next, Bais Cotton, if the deal is that he's going to build him a small house, so not a base chasnus or base almanus, but the definition of a small house is sheish al ches, is 6 by 8 amos. So in other words, the Rashbam says, he just says generically, make me a house, and the builder has yada al yoyne, he can choose to fulfill the minimum thing, to fulfill the contract. So then the minimum is that he builds a house 6 by 8. So now the point is, since he's saying it's a house, implying he wants it for himself, so it has to be a little bigger than a base chasnus. In the same way, if he's selling him a plot of land, for that purpose, it has to be at least 6 by 8, otherwise it would be a mekach toros. There's a Kabbalah dikavort from Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, on that, that says 6 and 8 represent two of the Yud Gimel Midas Arachmim. 6 is the mazel, is v'noitzer, ches is v'nake, and therefore one has to do more with the width and the other with the length, in terms of the width of the hashpah and the length, how far down it goes to us, and therefore that's why you have over here 6 by 8, 6 wide and 8 long. Anyway, Gadol, if he says, I want you to build me a big house, so then ches al eser, then the minimum is 8 by 10. Traklin, if he says, I want you to build me a traklin, which is a place where noblemen and important people are sitting, so it's not so much used as a house to live in, it's meant more like as a banquet hall or something like that. So then at yud al yud, then it has to be 10 by 10. Then it has to be 10 by 10 amos minimum. And the Rashbam explains, since it's not used to live in, it's used as like a banquet hall or whatever, therefore, unlike the other ones, which are rectangular, this one would be square. In each case, in each case, the height has to be the average of the length and the width. So, for example, with the 6 by 8 house, the height has to be 7 amos. Which is the average between 6 and 8, and the same thing with 8 by 10, it has to be 9 amos and so forth. Raya Ladova, where's a proof for that? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Kedinin HaHechel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, look at the dimensions of the Hechel. The Hechel was, the Kodesh was 40 amos long, 20 wide, and the height was 30 amos, as the Gemara is going to discuss in detail tomorrow. So we see that it was halfway between those measurements. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Why does the Mishnah mention specifically like that? You're building a house for his son to live in after his chasana, or he's building a house for his daughter to live in after she becomes when she's widowed. Why does it need to mention those particular points? Listen, base chasnus of noy levitoy or base almanus of noy levitoy. Just say it could be the base chasnus on the face of it could be for either the son or the daughter, and the base almanus also could be for either the son or the daughter. So the Gemara answers, Milsa Agav Urche Kamash Malon. The Mishnah, by the way, wants to tell us something incidental, as we often find that the Lashon of the Mishnah that Amam points out is very precise. Dover Kotzel Rekoil and Yonim Rabim. It's very brief, but it includes a lot of points in it. And here you have an important point that the Mishnah wants to teach us. It's not the right thing, it's not the proper thing for a son-in-law to live by his parents-in-law. The Gemara elsewhere explains, Gemara elsewhere explains in Pesachim, there's two problems with it. The son-in-law is likely to be too close with his mother-in-law. You have all the jokes about mothers-in-law, but that's usually the mother-in-law may not like the daughter-in-law so much, but she likes the son-in-law. And you have two potential problems. The Gemara points out in Pesachim, she may actually be mizana with him, or even if not, she may end up, she's so fond of him that that she spends her husband's money on him to an extent that's not right with her husband, though the father-in-law wouldn't approve of. So the son-in-law shouldn't live there. Tosfos elsewhere discusses the fact is, in later times, you have, it's very common on Edom of Kest, you have, in fact, the son-in-law lives together with his parents-in-law, and they offer, the Tosfos and various other Rishonim offer different reasons for it. One of them is because we Pasha don't have a choice, there's no place else to live.
I don't know if it was that far, but the money part, yes, but living with that by the father-in-law's house, that doesn't really happen. But.
Yeah, so the point is, therefore, so it could cause potential problems, but yeah. And then in later times, they didn't always have a choice of where they're going to live, and therefore the Rishonim find different, at least if the Chosan and Kala have their own room, then maybe it's not so bad. Anyway. So that's why the Mishnah focuses on a base chasnus for the son and a base almanus for the daughter. Kedichtib de Sefer ben Sira, as in fact we find in Sefer ben Sira, which is a sefer from the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, the author of it, it's brought in some places, was a grandson of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. It wasn't written with Ruach HaKodesh, but it's therefore it's not part of Tanakh, but it's got Divrei Chochma in it, parts of it are in the style of Sefer Mishlei, and then the Gemara in many places quotes from it. Anyway, he says, Akol Shakalti B'Kaf Maznaim, I've weighed many things in a balance scale, Kal Misubin, I couldn't find anything lighter and less important than bran. Now, the Rashbam says that bran, obviously there are lighter things, feathers, for example, but it means bran is psoilus. So like it's like the waste of food. It's like bran from grain. It's not really, so it's not only, it's light, not only it's physically light, but it's also, it's not very important stuff. But kalmi subin, but then even lighter and even less worthy of respect than subin, Chosin Ador Beveis Chomiv is a son-in-law who lives in his father-in-law's house. The Kalme Chosin, even lighter and less substantial than that, is Urach Machnis Urach, one guest who invites another guest in without permission. The Kalme Urach Meshiv Dover B'Tenem Yishma, even lighter and less substantial than that, is somebody who answers something before even listening to the whole thing. Shanema, as the pasuk says, Meshiv Dover B'Tenem Yishma, a person responds to something before he even hears the whole thing. Yvelis Hiloi, this is actually a pasuk from Mishlei, that it's a foolishness for him, and it's an embarrassment. So in other words, we see a chosin is not supposed to live in his father-in-law's house. Now, what's the significance of all this comparison? So Marsha explains like this: the subin, we don't just mean actual bran itself. The Gemara elsewhere explains that when a person borrows money, should we learn in Bava Kama, shava kesef afilu subin, he's entitled to pay back even with bran. But that's not the right thing to do. It's not derech eretz tikka thing to do. The guy lent you good money, and you're going to pay him back with bran, which is going to take him forever to sell. So that's what we're saying. The Leimat says he kal mi subin. Not just in other words that it's something physically insubstantial, but in other words it's very not embarrassing. But it's very ungrateful for somebody to act like that. Even worse is a chosin ador b'veis chomiv, where he thinks to himself, you know what, I'm like Yaakov, you know, my father-in-law is getting bracha through me. And he doesn't realize, meanwhile, that he's meanwhile taking advantage of his in-laws in a way that he shouldn't be. Even worse than that is the Urach Machnis Urach, where again he thinks, you know what, listen, we know that the Balabayas gets more out of the Urchim than he gives to them because he's doing chesed to them and the Eibishter pays him back. So therefore, I should have the right to bring in other Urchim. And no, you have no right to think of yourself in such a high way like that. Then the worst one is Meshiv Dover B'Terem Yishma, which means he doesn't even bother listening to the whole question and comes up with the right answer. He's likely to think for himself to himself for the future, look what a brilliant guy I am that I came up with the answer. Without even having to hear the whole thing, and then he's going to think for himself in the future that he has that capability, and meanwhile it's going to turn out for him an embarrassment. That in the future he's going to try to do the same thing, and it's going to turn out that he doesn't know what he's talking about. That's Marsha, and then there's various other explanations of what the connection between each of these things between each of these things is in terms of why Ben Sira, who after all again was a Yid a Talmud Chacham, even if not a Baal Ruach HaKodesh, why he's saying that each one is worse than the other one. Okay. Anyway, the point is that's why the Mishnah phrases it that he makes a base chasnus libnoi, because his son shouldn't be living by his in-laws. He's going to be living close to him, and a base amulus libitoi for the same reason that while they were married, they were living near him. Now, and they were living near the chosin's parents. Now that the husband passed away and the wife is returning to her parents' household, so they build her a base amulus. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel, I mean, Refis Bakr Hizu, Rabbi Shmuel had said that this is a stable, and the Mishnah had continued, Haroitza Lassus, hold up, a person wants to make a stable, then it's going to be 4x6. So the question is, Refis Bakr Man Katoni La, which Tanner, Rabbi Shmuel, or Rabbi Akiva, is the one mentioning this point about Refis Bakr? So Ikad Amar Rabbi Shmuel Katoni La, some say that's part of Rabbi Shmuel's statement, Ikadami Rabbi Akiva Katoni La, others say it's part of Rabbi Akiva's statement. Ikadami Rabbi Akiva Katani Law, it's like this. For Achakama, Afal Pisha Refis Bakr, he says to Rabbi Shmuel, fine, I agree with you that 4x6 is only the size of a Refis Bakr, but fine, Pa'amim Shadam Moise Dirasik Refis Bakr. Sometimes a person is willing to be satisfied that his house will be no larger than a stable. So therefore, so it's still valid to say that 4x6 is a valid size for this kind of thing. The Ikadam, Rabbi Shmuel Katani Law, others say this is Rabbi Shmuel's statement, Bahakama. And Rabbi Shmuel is saying, I'm telling you, 4x6 is not big enough. It's only the size of a stable. Sheha Roitza Lassus, Refis Bakr, because after all, you see that when a person is going to make a Refis Bakr, a stable for his cattle, Oisa Abamas Al Shesh, then he makes it only 4x6. And therefore, Rabbi Shmuel says, even a base Armulus, a base Chasnos, is going to have to be bigger than that, although he doesn't specify how big. We said in the Mishnah, Traklin Yodar Yod, that if you say I'm going to build a Traklin, then it has to be at least 10 by 10. My Traklin, what's the definition of a Traklin? Kubsa Ve Bardi, a building where they have a building, where a squarish building where they put roses. Rashbam says Kubsa can mean like Kuba Shal Zonus. It means like a large building, but it also means, in other words, that it has lots of windows in it. And Ve Bardi, they put over there roses as a nice thing for people to look at. So we're talking about, in other words, it's more like a hole rather than a place to live. Tony, and we learn a Bryce, if a cantor, if somebody says that he's going to build a cantor, then there, he says, I want you to build a cantor for me, that would be, which we'll explain in a second what that is, Shtemesra Yud Beis, then it has to be even bigger, 12 by 12. My cantor, Tarbitz Apabni, the cantor is a big chotzer that noblemen make. They'll have a mansion, and next day they'll have an open chotzer. So therefore, that's 12 by 12. And Ashbam explains the word tarbitz, the word rebates means to sprinkle water, to lay down the dust. Since it's outdoors, then they have to do that all the time to keep the dust from rising. That's why it's called a tarbitz. But the point is, it's 12 by 12. The Mishnah hadn't mentioned it because there's no height to it, because it's an open chotzer. It doesn't have a roof. So yeah. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we have some interesting agadah tomorrow as well about the size of the Bismikdash and Kruvim and Nesho Yoimnim and all that.